Welcome to the City on a Hill podcast. City on a Hill is a Catholic young adult community located in the greater Kansas City area with a mission to inspire and form the young adult generation in their pursuit of sainthood. In each episode, we feature a young adult who will share their story of encountering Christ, some specific ways they are personally pursuing sainthood, and how they live on mission here in Kansas City. We are grateful you've decided to tap into our community and hope that you feel inspired on your personal pursuit of sainthood. Thanks for listening in, and here are your hosts.
Welcome back to another episode of the City on a Hill podcast, where we interview Catholics in their 20s and 30s in Kansas City and get their stories of faith and ask them a few other questions as well. Happy to welcome on the show today, Nick and Maddie Occhiogrosso. Welcome, you guys.
Hey. Awesome. Thanks for having us, Father.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys are both transplants, actually, before we kind of get into the meat of things, transplants from the Northeast. Mm-hmm. And maybe just share, like, just real quickly, I'm kind of curious, like, one thing that you are happy to have left behind and one thing that you miss.
Oh, happy to left behind is real easy. I grew up in Binghamton, New York, which has the distinction of being the cloudiest city in the country.
Really?
Over Seattle. So that is really depressing. In Kansas, I'm like, blue skies.
Yeah.
I guess I miss the hills.
Okay.
Yeah.
I grew up in New York City, so for all of you that are from New York City, God love you, but I'm so glad to be out of there. I give you a long list of things that I don't miss.
Yeah.
Traffic, cost of living, etc. But you cannot beat the food there. New York pizza has a special place in my heart. Chinese, the best Chinese you'll ever get.
Yeah.
Greek.
Even better than China.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an awesome place. It's a good place to visit, but Kansas City's home for us,
yeah,
for sure.
No, that's awesome. Okay, good. Well, we'll just dive right in. So I don't know which of you wants to start first, but love to hear hear your stories.
All righty. Yeah, I'll go first. So I don't have a super exciting conversion story, but definitely a long gradual process. So I'm a cradle Catholic, youngest of three girls, and I can honestly say that I don't ever recall not caring about my relationship with God. Like, I've always, you know, to some degree loved the Lord. Mm-hmm. And maybe even this just is astonishing to me, sort of. I don't ever recall doubting his love for me. And I think the biggest reason for that, particularly in childhood, was just being the loved youngest child. Both my older sisters have been super examples, always knew my mom and dad, loved me. Even I have a cousin who's 3 weeks younger than I am, and, you know, it was like a real friendship built in from right off the start, like actual friends, you know, like really wanted the best for each other. And so, yeah, with every year that goes on, I am more grateful for just kind of that nurturing beginning. Because there's so many that don't have that experience. And for me, it was so easy to kind of extend out, like, well, these people all care about me so much. God does too, you know? So that was kind of my beginning as a child. And then as a teenager, I would say I practiced some devotions with regularity, at least, you know, tried to pray the rosary occasionally and on my own, I should say. And I got along really well with people and didn't sort of have, how do I say? I was very vain and materialistic and selfish, but these were all sort of things that I was able to keep inside. So, so my faults were more interior ones, but I look back now and I see a great deal of pride. Let's see, how do I want to say? Particularly with sins of, you know, sort of losing control or purity, things like that. I was never a rebellious teenager, and so I sort of didn't understand how people would fall into those. It was just kind of like, well, this isn't so bad, you know, and it's not too hard. So very much now I realize that I was taking credit for any good qualities that I had and really relying on myself, and therefore sort of just had a tendency to look down on others. So I graduated high school real young, went to college at Christendom College, which is a really little liberal arts school in Virginia, and met Nick. and so we fell in love pretty much immediately. we had, I think, 4 out of 6 classes together. We ate together. We studied together, the whole thing. And by November, he asked me on a date and sort of quasi-proposed at the same time. And
wow, that's really going for, going for it.
It was crazy. But and I didn't find that to be amiss. We were just kind of like, yeah, we're going to get married. But so the first several months of our relationship were very innocent. Just holding hands was, you know, tremendously exciting, I think, for both of us. But then the minute that we kissed, it was kind of like things just changed, because and I'm sure lots of people out there listening who are in love can relate to this, but subconsciously or not, it's like then you're just looking for, like, when's the next time we're going to be alone for a couple minutes, or you know, just it, there's a shift towards the more physical. And this terrified me. I knew my catechism. I was homeschooled growing up, and I had learned my faith well. And so, you know, it's one of the harder sayings of the church. I think you have, on the one hand, showing affection for somebody that you love is no sin at all. But then on the other, it's, you know, kind of a fine line. And I can't remember who put it this way, but like setting the table for a meal that you don't intend to eat, kind of. And even putting yourself in that situation, knowing that you're going to have difficulty, would be a serious thing, you know? So I was shocked that I, of all people, you know, having thought so well of myself, and, you know, I just couldn't believe the power of those feelings and the fact that I was struggling with them. So there you go, pride, big ugly pride. So we decided kind of the end of freshman year that I would go back home to New York at the time, and I went to cosmetology school, and Nick stayed at Christendom. We just knew that living in close proximity for 4 years, we would never make it, remain chaste, and we also just kind of wanted to test whether we were just teenagers in love, or, you know, just see how that held up. So for a year, we only had to worry about purity, you know, every 5 to 6 weeks for a weekend stint. So that was better. And obviously we did make it through the long distance, and then Nick proposed, and then my family moved to Virginia, where Christendom was, and actually where Nick's family was too. And that sounds kind of weird, but it's not. It's the town is a great Catholic hub. It's like equal parts total country hicks and then really Orthodox Catholics.
That's awesome.
So
That's awesome.
Yeah. But so then it was kind of the same thing. You know, we're together every day. And the reason that this is kind of what I always come back to in my testimony is because I think you can't have a good spiritual life without humility. And that's really what I learned in the period, particularly of our engagement, was like just a dose of reality that I can't do anything without God's grace. And just learning to stay really close to the sacraments, you know? And I also, you know, I remember particularly like just the place that I was and this just having a conversation with the Lord, like, I can't believe, like, I do love you. I guess I don't love you enough because I'm still doing things that hurt you and I can't even seem to stop myself. So, like, please, Lord, let me love you more. You know, I'm not there yet, obviously. And I don't think it had ever really struck me before just how much we have to keep pursuing a deeper love. Like, you can't just say, I'm good. So first of all, obviously just learning that humility and then not being surprised anymore by failing. That has changed. That I think that was really important to know going into marriage and being a mom and everything is like, yeah, you're gonna fall. And that shouldn't be a shocker if you have some humility that you gotta just go back to the sacraments and pick yourself up and try again. And then I think another really important aspect of that was just learning mercy for others because I realized that having had sort of the perfect foundation of learning the faith since childhood and having a strong family network and, you know, not seeking love in the wrong place, like all these things that were just sort of handed to me out of God's goodness. And I still had the same struggles that every other human does. You know, I wasn't immune to passions and failings. And so that has really helped me look on other people with much greater compassion. So, yeah, that's kind of the testimony in a nutshell, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you guys have been married how long now?
We're coming up on 14.
14 years.
Wow, 14
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
Awesome. Praise the Lord. And yeah, thank you for sharing that. I was pretty struck by the fact that I don't know if I'd ever heard that from you guys, actually, that you'd made the decision after your freshman year to actually, like, separate by hundreds of miles. And I find that pretty remarkable because, you know, just from ministering to a lot of, you know, young adults who are, like, dating and moving towards marriage and trying to live, you know, chastely. And for many, even just the decision to, like, not be alone together for a certain period of time is like not necessarily unthinkable, but like seems to be like an extraordinary sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And then just hearing that you guys are ready to basically like move hundreds of miles apart to sort of like protect that. And like you said, as a sort of like also an aspect of discernment to see if what you had really was just kind of a passing, like, we're 19 years old and you know, I find that to be remarkably like courageous and also humble and unusual, at that age to like be willing to do something like that. Was that a hard decision for you guys? Or?
Oh yeah.
It was awful.
Yeah.
To not sugarcoat it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, that 2 years or so of being separated by a six plus hour car drive was definitely not enjoyable at all, but it was the right one. And definitely had a lot of guidance from parents, especially kind of, you know, keeping us in our place and take your foot off the gas a little bit, kind of a thing. So
it just lends a lot more clarity when you're not, you know, looking into someone's eyes. Right. You're like, all you've got is the phone call and, you know.
It was before FaceTime. So.
Yeah, it was before FaceTime. True. So we had to, I mean, Nick had the corded phone in the kitchen, I think, at his house.
Yeah, did
the
landline. Really?
Yep. Sit on the washing machine. Yep. And
that's awesome.
Old school.
Close the door. That's awesome. So it was definitely not fun, but I really believe that God blessed that decision.
Yeah.
So very thankful. And I have tremendous compassion for all people that are engaged.
Yeah.
You're almost there.
No, it's funny. Like, it's interesting having gone through marriage prep with a variety of couples sort of across the whole spectrum, you know. The couples that are really trying to live chastely are usually pretty anxious to get married and because they want to protect that, and the couples that maybe aren't very interested in remaining chaste, they don't really care if their engagement is, you know, 2 years, 3 years, you know, I'm sure anyone listening who's engaged appreciates your compassion.
I mean, Nick did talk about a secret ceremony with two witnesses, but, you know.
It was an option.
We thought we should let our friends be there, so.
Wait, did you end up getting married back in New York or in Virginia?
No, it was Virginia.
Virginia.
Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. Well, Nick, let's hear it.
Sure.
Let's hear all about growing up in New York City.
Yeah. Crazy place. I'm the oldest of six kids. So big family background. And kind of similar to Maddie, cradle Catholic. And it was just kind of an intrinsic part of being a cultural Italian. I mean, there's St. Andrew Avellino was a parish right down the block from us, and it had all kinds of Italian ethnic stuff going on at all times. So that cultural, that ethnic heritage that I was fortunate to inherit was something that was kind of external to me, right? Obviously. It was a faith that was part of the family background, part of the family history. So I'd say my testimony, my progress has been taking that thing that was external to me and making it my own. So, again, like family background, solid faith. My parents were always super devout. We had, you know, regular family prayer time. We would go to pro-life events, you know, kind of your stereotypical kind of stuff. We also went on a yearly family retreat. There's a retreat center right outside of Steubenville, Ohio, Catholic Family Land, which is a cool place.
It's called Catholic Family Land?
It's called Catholic Family Land.
Wow.
That was just all these different factors that kind of influenced my growth, but it was not something that I really ever internalized. And definitely by nature, I'm very kind of prideful, self-reliant, totally independent sort of a person. So I would just recall kind of an anecdote from being at this family retreat center where the staff had coordinated an evening of really intense, charismatic, spiritual opportunity, if you will. They had adoration, Blessed Sacrament. It was all really, really beautiful. Kind of now in our married life, we get to go to Casey Underground. So it's kind of an experience like that. But anyways, as a middle schooler, kind of in this spirit of I've got all things figured out, you know, kind of keep everyone at arm's distance. I remember that as a time, you know, a specific moment of here I had this opportunity given to me to really have this encounter with the Lord through the Blessed Sacrament. And just kind of stiff-armed it, kept it at bay, which is such a shame. But anyways, that's kind of middle school. You know, I had this opportunities and such and didn't take advantage of them. In high school, I had a phenomenal all-boys Catholic high school that I went to, and like right outside of Queens, New York. And really there, the formation that we received was just stellar. I was run by Catholic Marianist brothers and priests, and we were just really what's the word I'm looking for? Just fostered this sense of the sacredness of the faith, the truth that exists there, and how that truth trickles down into society, and when you reject that truth, you have some unfortunate side effects, if you will. Natural law, you know, really seeing things built into our very essence. So this amazing education kind of formed me rationally, intellectually, in kind of buying in the intellectual life anyways, into what the church offers. But even still, having said that, you know, the faith to me was still almost an extension of my pride. It might sound like a strange thing to say, but I'm assenting, I'm giving my thoughts over and kind of some spirit of humility before the church's kind of structure and teaching and philosophy and just the weight of all that. But it was not a personal faith. It was not an encounter with the person of Christ. It was kind of external and like a challenge almost. Like, this is the best of what humanity can be, and that's where I'm going because I want to be that way too. But high school had, you know, some habitual sins that I was struggling with, and that was a real draw emotionally anyways away from the faith. And hadn't gone to confession in a long time, and I don't know if it was junior or senior year, finally kind of humbled myself enough, got up enough courage, went to our pastor, Father Stanganelli. Awesome. Hopefully Father's great doing name. Well, but I just recall, you know, kneeling in the confessional on the side of the church, and he was just so, he was super firm in a masculine way of like, you know, you should stop this thing, you idiot. But he was also extremely merciful and, you know, the two sides of the coin. So that was an incredible encounter with mercy in that particular instance. And then, yeah, kind of moving from high school years to college. The biggest turning point, I would say, for my college years was, yeah, I had like these witnesses to the faith leading up to that time. Again, we went to Christendom College, as a school outside of D.C. But yeah, leading up to college, all these witnesses to the faith were not my peers. So I had, you know, parents, grandparents, teachers, pastors, etc. But that witness to a lived personal spirituality from my peers, from other students at the school was really, really great. Brought about a lot of growth for sure. And then obviously met my wife there. So just a tremendous blessing in the course of the thing of my life. But in at the point of really discerning engagement, I got it in my head again, pride, like, oh, you know, maybe this amazing woman that God has given me is as a test. Maybe I need to be a priest. Maybe I'm called, you know, to go to seminary or something. So I was racking my brain over it and so stressed. And so I went to the pastor, or not the pastor, but the chaplain at Christendom. And I was kind of laying out the story for him. And he's like, dude, you just got to chill out a little bit. just take a deep breath, you know, pray over it. And I don't know if it was that very evening or if it was the next. I went to the chapel there at the school and, you know, really pouring my heart out. And this sounds unlikely, but I'm telling you, I heard God speak to me. And I was sitting there praying and I just heard it. I like turned around in the pew and I just heard, trust me, trust me, like just let go. And you know, this is the path that you have to take. So that was just flooring. But yeah, then, you know, engagement, marriage, Maddie has an unbelievable, warmth in her spirituality. You know, she just said how that she never doubted God's love for her, and that was something totally foreign to me. So that's been just a phenomenal, again, witness to faith and how it should be lived for myself. And then I would give just one other person who's influenced me. It was actually an employer that I had for a lot of years. Chris McMahon, father of a big family, working construction. And he was in his, let's see, if I was in my mid-20s working for them, he was probably in his late 50s or early 60s. And the guy just killed it on the job site. He was ripped. And cold of winter, heat of summer, and never faltered, gave 100%. They lived real close to church in town, and he would walk every single night to the chapel. He had a really structured prayer life. And it was just an incredible witness. He had adoration at 4 o'clock in the morning on, I think it was Thursdays.
Wow.
So he'd go get up super early and go to adoration and then come, you know, right to work. And he was a little cranky those days, but I mean, totally natural, right?
Yeah,
just fantastic. Yeah, and then really recently, we were fortunate enough to go through formation with an organization called Evangelical Catholic, and the growth in my personal prayer life from the instruction, the education of what prayer should be through that organization's materials has been game changing. I mean, moving from what I've talked about of like this rational faith to an encounter with Christ through the scriptures it's been great. Yeah. So we're really, really blessed.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
yeah, there's a lot of interesting things in your story, Nick. I've only heard like bits and pieces of that before. So that's great to hear. But it's really interesting. You mentioned, kind of the cultural aspect of the faith growing up, like living in sort of an Italian Catholic context. And I mean, usually, I shouldn't say usually, but often, when you hear people like, well, I should put it this way. There's good cultural Catholicism, and then there's really bad cultural Catholicism where it's just going through the motions, right? Sure. What do you like, I guess, what do you give credit to that in some of these contexts that in which you grew up, that it was sort of like good cultural Catholicism, if that question makes sense?
The food. No.
Yeah. Because bad cultural Catholicism is when, you know, people are like, well, I'm Catholic because I'm Italian, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like the faith is merely tied to an ethnic identity as opposed to like, you know, being really embraced because it's true and it's good and it's beautiful and like because I've met Jesus and, you know, so I guess
I would I mean, I'm just conjecturing, but I would think it's probably based on the family's dynamic as a whole. Mm. I mean, if this is just something you do, you know, church attendance or, or, you know, support of the church in your time or money, if that's something that's really external to you, that's kind of accidental to your identity. Whereas, I mean, my parents, really made it something that was part of our lived daily experience. And they were faithful to that. I mean, my dad was, a high school teacher, modest means. My mom stayed home with us, and being a parent now myself, I am sure they made lots of sacrifices to being faithful to what the church teaches. So it's, just making it kind of internal to the family life, I think is the biggest difference.
I think there's a, I mean, 'cause I'm Italian too. And one of the lovelier aspects, I think, is like the devotions to particular saints. Like Italians are really, you know, focused on certain saints. And even in our little upstate town, there was like a huge St. Anthony's festival. And I know your mom talks about the Santa Rosalia, you know, festival in New York City. And St., you know, St. Rocco. And two of our children's names, by the way. But yeah, so those are kind of the better aspect. And I feel like those, like I did tend to be drawn towards some of those saints just because they were, you know, St. Joseph is a, Italians love St. Joseph. Not that, I mean, lots of people do, but I always felt a special affinity towards him that was maybe encouraged just by growing up in an Italian family.
No, that's awesome. I'm just curious, like, you know, so many Americans that are Catholic come from these various ethnic backgrounds where at certain points the faith has been like super alive, and there's still sort of like traces of that in these various devotions or practices. And so it's interesting, like even if in certain contexts they're just gone through sort of as if they were going through the motions, there's still sort of like the seeds in those practices that could like spark something, you know? So it's, I don't know, it's an interesting thing to think about. But yeah, well, the next kind of like general question that I want to ask you guys, actually want to kind of, which is basically like, how have you, like, how are you currently trying to sort of like really grow in holiness, whether individually as a couple? But before I let you answer that, actually, I just am kind of curious to hear. So knowing you guys for, I don't know, 4 years now, maybe something like that. one thing I've seen from the outside and getting to know you both a little bit is in terms of your family dynamic. I don't know how best to describe it, but I think the word that comes to mind most quickly is simplicity, that you guys live a very sort of like, in the best possible sense of the word, that like things that are important are important, things that aren't important aren't important. And that creates a kind of like simplicity in the way you live, simplicity in just kind of like even in material things, and in the midst of material simplicity, also welcoming many children. You know, you have six kids. And so I guess I don't know if that's something you guys ever sat down and said, we want to really strive for simplicity as a family. But maybe, I mean, is there anything that you want to say about sort of just if this word rings true, and if there are things that you really strive for that you think could help other families? Because I meet a lot of young families that are like, we want the family to be first. We want to like have first priorities as first priorities. You know, we don't want to overextend ourselves into useless things. Like we want to always keep our kids as our first mission, you know, and all this. Anything you can say about how that's gone in the last 14 years? And
yeah, for sure. it's definitely been a conscious decision. I don't know if we ever had a moment of clarity in which we sat down and said, we're going to live more simply. but it's been, you know, like this North Star, if you will. And we've always towards, you know, kind of reoriented ourselves towards, and I think it's indispensable. I know lots of people who are very busy with all kinds of extracurricular activities in their families, and not to look down on that, you know, that probably works for different family dynamics. But yeah, it's definitely been a conscious decision to weed out extraneous things. You know, we try and live low tech as much as possible while still obviously living in 2022. But that, again, using that same word, low tech, just gives a certain amount of quiet, as much as you can have with six kids, that is missing otherwise. You know, when you always have something blaring in the background, and you know, whatever your choice of news source might be, you know, harping at you in the background, you just lose a lot there in having a certain amount of peace in amongst the chaos. And yeah, we've also, as part of that, really try to keep Sunday as a day of nothing. And not that it's empty, but that we will, you know, try and get to Mass with everyone looking somewhat clean and orderly. We might have missing, you know, a missing sock and mismatched shoes, but yeah, I mean, it's a very conscious decision of, Mass on Sunday, and then coming home and relaxing, typically over a lot of food. And we very frequently have, you know, guests on Sundays, whether it's family or friends or neighbors or whatnot. So hopefully that answers the question, kind of.
I was going to say, too, just with material simplicity, I think that maybe came easier for us because we got married really young and didn't make, I mean, we made such a small amount of money when we first got married that of necessity we were frugal then. But just realizing that truly those who have more than you are not usually happier because of that. And that people don't really care. They just want to be together. Like, you don't need to have an incredible, you know, Johnson County house to make people comfortable. They just don't care. People just want to be, they just want to share a meal and have a good time. So,
I love the way you put that. Like, I'll tell couples a lot during marriage prep, because a lot of them, even if they have good Catholic formation, they have this sort of super, I think, oftentimes unhelpful American mindset about wanting to give their kids like a certain standard of material things, and even immaterial goods such as like a college education and things, and all decent things to strive for. But what gets lost a lot in that is kind of what you just mentioned, Maddie, that like when you talk to people about their childhood, like almost never does somebody like say, oh, I was really wounded or like felt unloved because I didn't have X or Y like material standard. But if they weren't loved, like if there wasn't love in the home, then like that's what hurts, right? That's what people talk about. That's the cause of misery years later, right? And like you said, like people don't care really about the material stuff, kids especially. And so I remember pulling up to y'all's house one time actually, and a bunch of your boys were like, what were they doing? You had these like big bushes like on the side of your driveway, and they were like going in, I don't know if they had gloves on or not, but they were basically catching a certain kind of bug. And
shaking the Japanese beetles out.
And I think they were like putting them all in a jar or something. And just to go back to the low tech thing, like how creative kids get with having fun.
And then feeding them to the chickens. right? Which means bugs turned into eggs. Nice. Which is awesome.
Which is beautiful. Nice.
Yes.
Wow. Circle of life.
Yeah.
That's awesome. No, that's great. And yeah, I don't know if you guys want to add on to that, anything that you're sort of currently focusing on to try and grow in holiness together or individually?
Well, we usually, we always do some sort of family prayer, hopefully the rosary, but it could just be the chaplet or doing the, readings and talking about them a little bit. Hmm. But for myself personally, I think my focus has been just because my schedule, it's next to impossible to like really structure things just because of different things with having babies and toddlers and such, but has been trying to practice the presence of God throughout the day, like constantly speaking to him, both in gratitude and also, when there's a really trying moment. Just, my kids are used to me just saying out loud, like, Jesus, help me. Jesus, help me. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I can't remember which one, but one of them is a toddler, like, shouted that out at one point. And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. Nice. Yeah, and then just also kind of in the vein of what I said before of not focusing on failings. There's sometimes I'll feel sort of disheartened because it's like, geez, I'm still not patient. Like I want to be patient, or like I imagine that I would be patient as a mom or whatever. But then, when I sort of take like a really bigger view of kind of life the last 14 years, I'm like, if we got married and were given 6 children ages 1 to 12 overnight, I would have had a complete nervous breakdown, caring for people like that. But here I am. And so for all the times that I did not, accept the grace to mortify myself or be patient or just selfless, putting somebody ahead, like, oh, there has been progress, clearly, and the Lord is just going to keep giving me opportunities and we'll get there someday, So just like, and I find this to be a really common thing with other moms that I talk to, of just being really hard on ourselves. And it just doesn't do any good to dwell on the little failings that you had throughout the day. Like, you just have to not be surprised and ask forgiveness and try again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are really little things, but that's kind of been my main focus.
That's awesome. Seems like a bit of a theme in your life, maybe not being surprised at faults.
Yeah.
One of the best books I've read in the last 5 years probably is How to Profit from Your Faults. I don't know if you guys have heard that one. But a great little book written in the late 1800s, I think, and kind of opens your mind up to all these different ways that we can like draw good from failings, which is obviously pretty much the heart of Christianity, good coming from evil. Yeah, that's a great thing. I'm glad you brought that up. I hope some of our listeners, that can bless them a little bit. I'll put that book in the notes as well. But that's a super critical piece of the Christian life, to not be surprised at faults and try and grow from them. So it's great.
Yeah,
Nick.
Yeah, no. For myself, Maddie kind of already mentioned it, but as a family, definitely practicing, or at least trying to establish the habit in the kids of daily prayer. It's a big challenge. If anyone that has kids knows, getting them all to sit still and be quiet is definitely
you do not need water right now.
Right.
Sit down.
It's definitely a challenge, but trying to get them to move past move past, you know, rote prayers are great for a group, but getting them to see why we do the things that we do.
Yeah.
Because when they reach a point of, you know, a crossroads in their life, they need to know the why. You know, why are we doing X, Y, or Z? Why do we live differently than maybe some of the kids that they encounter? So, yeah, just trying to help them to grow in that. And then for myself, you know, being just busy with work and family life and fixing up our house and such, establishing and holding to daily mental prayer is my biggest challenge.
Yeah.
And what I also derive the most benefit from.
Yeah.
I had, somebody tell me that if we're not being filled up with, you know, something good, what we draw from prayer, then we're going to be filled up with something else. And I feel that immediately. As soon as I fall out of the structured habit of that time, everything else becomes more difficult and my mind will wander and this, you know, old temptation might crop up again or whatever it might be. So, yeah, just an encouragement and push yourself towards faithfulness to that kind of plan of life.
Yeah. No, that's great. With kind of like trying to teach your kids the why behind the faith, I think that's a great point. Are a couple of your older ones kind of at the point now where they're starting to ask more sort of pointed questions in that realm?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, the oldest being 12 going on 13. I think, yeah, that's definitely a big period of transition and showing the why, and then also very intentionally the joy that is there, because I think all too often there's a lot of frustration and rightfully so, there's a lot of frustration and negativity that surrounds, you know, some current issues of the day, things going on in society as a whole. People can kind of just harp on that and stay in that place of just this kind of fog and this gray and this smog that surrounds it. I can kind of see this picture of the mood that I'm kind of thinking of, but that's in my opinion, that's kind of a dangerous place to allow yourself to stay. And especially when that's the appearance that you're giving to your kids, I think they can kind of go off the rails very easily, because if this is a way of life that's overwhelmingly negative or critical, then there's something lost there. So trying to combat that as much as possible in a person that's naturally pessimistic like myself is is kind of a challenge. But
that's so good. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah. Cause so basically kind of a little bit of what you're saying sounds like, you know, we have to be able to not only explain the why to kids, but also demonstrate that with joy. And if one or the other is missing, but particularly if the joy part is missing, then things aren't going to match up. I'm going to give them a false impression of what Christianity is all about. And that's awesome. That's great that's a.
Yeah, I would just add to that. I think it's so important for kids to see that their parents make good choices with regard to media as well. Not, you know, not like you can't see that, but it's okay for us because we're adults. That's sometimes true, you know, with just the themes of movies or books or whatever, certainly has to be age appropriate. But just them seeing that, like, while mom and dad live the way that they're telling us to, you know, like they're not.
With the older.
What am I trying to say?
Yeah, with the older boys especially, we try and repeat to them, like, the expectations that we have for you are the same that we have for ourselves. And I'm not asking you to do something or to not enjoy something that that I'm not expecting the same of myself. You know, there's definitely a, especially as a teenager, preteen, there's a certain sense of loss that you can perceive in a kid where, you know, they're talking about this or that movie, or they have this particular video game, or whatever it might be. I want my own phone. They really struggle with that, to be different. But coming back to, you know, okay, well, this is why we don't look at X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
This is why we're not going to give you a phone.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, this that you're going to fall into, and it's going to take you down this path that's dangerous.
Yeah.
So, and, you know.
Yeah. Again, the why is really, really important.
Yeah.
And Dad says that this is why you're not going to have a phone. And I mean, unless he's like looking up the address somewhere or whatever, I defy you to see Nick scrolling on his phone. He just doesn't do it. So they see, you know, they it's see lived, that.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shoot,
I was going to add something to that, but must not have been too important.
We'll keep remember. It. Yeah, that. Those are all really great things. Yeah, I think it's something I've given deep thought to, but it does seem like as a parent that could be a super easy temptation to say like, well, we'll set these rules for our kids, but then turn around and basically kind of indulge these things that are unhelpful to the Christian life ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's good. Lastly, if you guys would share maybe a way or two that you're trying to kind of live a sort of evangelistic kind of mission-based life as a family, love to hear it.
Yeah, as a family with kind of a full plate, as it were, I would say our kind of common purpose has been hospitality and exercising that virtue. You know, we have lots of friends and family, and it's always a distinct pleasure to enjoy dinner with them or brunch on a Sunday or, you know, whatever it might be. But moving beyond that place of comfort, if you will, being intentional in seeing those around us who maybe from what we know, they're probably a lonely type of character. Mm-hmm. We have a couple people like that in our life that we intentionally reach out to and try and pull into our lived family day-to-day kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Just exercising hospitality and being I'm kind of repeating myself, but being intentional in reaching out to others.
I would just piggyback this. I was reminded because we were talking before about, you know, material things and not being important. And one particular person that Nick is talking about, who, sort of a lonelier character that we've had over. And as some of you know, but our house is just in the works. There's a lot of progress that's been made, but it's in the works. It's an old farmhouse. But this person was walking around there and he was like, I like your house. There's just nothing too precious in here. Just, I like it. I was like, thank you.
But it was truly
meant as, you know, as a compliment. So just to go back to that, just come on in, you know. Mm-hmm. And it'll probably be crazy and loud. Louder than maybe what you're used to, but we're happy to have you. Any other kind of extra outside the house mission fields, we just discern very carefully whether they fit into kind of the family schedule. They're sort of few and far between, but we're always open to them, I hope.
We were talking about this before we started recording, but I've just been reflecting a little bit recently because we've had a number of married couples on that mentioned hospitality as like a big part of the mission that they live. And at first glance, it might seem kind of, I don't know the right way to put it, just sort of like, oh, par for the course. Like, oh yeah, we show hospitality. But the more I've thought about it, I mean, there's a unique kind of hospitality you can offer as a family, simply because the family mirrors the Trinity in a unique way. And so like inviting somebody into that is going to give them, even just by osmosis, kind of like an experience of God, hopefully. And particularly families with lots of life and joy and love. And so, so I think there's a lot to that. And particularly like you guys mentioned, being intentional about like, who can we invite into what we hope to be an atmosphere of love that they can just kind of imbibe just by being here, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, we had a married couple on several months ago that kind of mentioned the same thing, that they have sort of like this long list of people that are in their life, and they'll try once a month to just say like, Lord, like, who do you want us to, who do you want us to invite over, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Last question before you guys go. I'm just really curious. What is like within the past, I don't know, year, what's like the funniest moment that's happened in your house? Or the craziest thing that one of your kids has done?
Oh boy, I have to think about that for a minute.
The weirdest animal they brought in the house.
Oh, they're so nuts.
Give us a second.
Yeah.
You got something in mind?
Maybe.
I mean, if you watch them on the trampoline, it's a really terrifying thing. So that's pretty funny. Yeah, they're just, I mean, Rocco is just insane. He just turned 7, so maybe he's calming down a little bit, but his just normal mode of being is like, wow, just says, I can't think of anything.
I'm trying to think of something in particular. The editors will have to chop all this out.
No, it's great. One of my favorite memories from Mass, it was like 3 years ago. I think Rocco must have been, I guess, 4 or 5, something. Uh-huh. And Father Johnson had the Mass, so I had been like outside the church just kind of saying hi to people when they walk in, and Mass had started, and so I'm kind of like hanging out in the narthex with Mark, and you guys are normally in that kind of back pew on the St. Joseph side. Uh-huh. And I remember looking through kind of the doors of the narthex and seeing Rocco just with this like crazy looking like dinosaur hat on.
Yes, I know.
He was just like perched, you know, looking backwards and with this like super mischievous grin
always
on his face.
Always got it's
like,
on his
this
face.
Is the funniest thing. Like all these people like dressed really nicely for Mass, and then it's like crazy kid with a dinosaur hat on. It was awesome.
I know one funny thing. I don't know if it's crazy, but. One thing that really made us laugh was one night they were being just, you know, their usual wildness. And I don't know if we were washing the dishes or what, but Nick kind of offhandedly was like, just go outside and run. You need to go burn off energy or whatever. But just not really thinking about it, just kind of as a parent saying something that you hope, you know, will happen, but not really following through. And so maybe 10 minutes later, we're just chatting and we look out the window. And I think it might have been just Rocco was just running laps around the house, just continuously.
That's awesome. Like,
okay. Yeah. He knew that it was, it was necessary. And we just kept seeing him whip by.
Right.
That's awesome.
But anyway.
That's great. That's so great. Oh, man. Well, it was great having you guys on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And lots of nuggets there that I think a lot of families in particular will be able to latch on to. And, yeah, we hope those of you listening were inspired by Nick and Maddie's story. And, yeah, thanks for tuning in, and we hope you tune in next time. That's all for now. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the City on a Hill podcast. Consider subscribing so you don't miss another exciting episode, or leaving a review, which may help others find the podcast and be inspired on their pursuit of sainthood. Check out our website at kansascityonahill.org and consider joining us at one of our upcoming events. Be assured of our prayers for you and for all young adults in the Kansas City area. God bless.